Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
A lot of the people, like some of the people, didn't want to be known at all. They wanted to be kept anonymous, but then by the end of the project, they wanted to show their face on our documentary, which is amazing.
They come out with similar things about, you know, self-destruction or self-esteem. Low self-esteem was a big theme. And yeah, it just gives people an opportunity to be able to view it in a different way.
I think that lockdown was the first time I actually reached out for help properly, and I probably should have done it a long time ago.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. Hi, everyone. I hope you're well. Thanks for checking out this week's Mental Health Monday podcast. My name's Mick Coyle, as ever, bringing you the latest conversations when it comes to mental health. I've been really busy the last few weeks as well. I've got a couple of major projects ongoing as part of my sort of regular job as senior correspondent for the Bauer Radio Group. If you get a moment to check out the hashtags #MeetTheVaccinators, that's #MeetTheVaccinators. That's about introducing us to the men and women, the volunteers who have gone above and beyond to get us through the COVID vaccine sort of drive, if you like. Those who've really made a huge, huge difference. It's been a really good project to get involved in, and it's going out right across the UK, which is really sort of positive as well, so that people right across the country can meet the local vaccinators in their area who are making us a difference. Of course, today would have been the so-called Freedom Day. It's not the case. We've got to hold on until July the 19th at least for that. Fingers crossed, though, that we're doing okay and that people are working together and we're having conversations around our mental health if things aren't working out so well for us at the moment. Don't forget, of course, at the end of the podcast, I always do all the latest places that you can check out information, connections, local services, and so on and so forth. So hang on for that one too. The other one is about water safety, which has become a huge problem in the UK, particularly during warm summer months. That's another project that I'm involved in, #GetWaterWise. And again, that's operating right across the whole of the UK as well, because far and wide, people out and about during the summer getting into trouble in water, the sorts of water you think, well, I can swim that, or I won't have a problem if I just nip, can cause you terrible, terrible problems, like cold water shock, machinery, hidden currents you don't know about. #GetWaterWise, there's loads of stuff and content on social media about that too as well. Really important messages. But like I say, it's been a really busy week, but there's always time for Mental Health Monday. Of course there is. And a couple of guests on the programme this week who were formerly from the group called Mallet in the Community. Now, Mallet operate under the sort of social prescription model, and they do drama. They do drama for people who want to sort of explore that avenue as a potential means of maybe getting their head around their own mental health, but also to find something interesting and exciting, creative to do. And Anna Griffith and Megan Pete are brilliant guests. They've been on the programme before. And of course, them as young people have had, you know, a tough lockdown too. So we'll talk about that too. The reason that it's timely, the conversation, is because there's a rebrand for Mallet in the Community, and they're going to be changing their name to Dramatic Recovery, which is based around the fact that it's Dramatic Recovery. Well, it's a double play on words. I think it's a very clever title. But it's a sign that they're sort of invested in the programme and the programme is succeeding, and they're looking for a means of sort of growing that all the time. So loads of information online. I'll put contact details for those guys as well in the description for the podcast as well through Audio Boom. Anna will hear from first, talking through the changes and what a difficult year it's been for so many people.
Yeah, so we've been Mount the Community for 2 years now, and a lot of people ask us, what is it you do? And, you know, Mallet means motivated and loving it, and a lot of our work is motivating and helps people to feel motivated, but we also understand that when we are dealing with people with mental health issues, you don't always feel motivated, and we don't know if that would put people off a little bit. And because it doesn't really highlight the drama that we do for mental health, which is what makes us a unique service, we kind of wanted to give ourselves a name that did highlight exactly what we do, and Dramatic Recovery kind of hopefully explains that well. And yeah, we just thought it was time for a change, bit of a refresh, and that's why we went with it. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, lockdown has done lots of things to lots of different people, but I think it's also made people think, right, where are we going next? What's the next sort of 3 to 5 years going to look like? Megan, give us a sense of sort of how you viewed the project so far since its sort of inception, and now where you hope to take it under this sort of new guise.
Yeah, I think we just needed this kind of refresh, and like when we were going through lockdown and we were struggling ourselves with our mental health, and I think everyone was, they weren't in, there's a quote that says, you're not in the same boat, you're in the same storm. So everyone was different, and we were thinking, how can we help people in the healthcare sector, because they were going through so much. And I think just doing the rebrand just kind of refreshed our minds as well.
Yeah,
really helped us. And then going forward, we just want to be able to reach more people and help more people. And I think the message of the name kind of does that. And I think it's important to say as well, we're not completely, it's called dramatic recovery. And we understand that, you know, you don't, you can recover from, recovery means back to a state of mind that you had before. So we're saying to people, you know, mental health's like a spectrum almost, and you just move up and down that, and you can get to a point of recovery, but it doesn't mean that you might not take a few steps back, but then there's always a place to look forward. So there was a little bit of that behind the name that we enjoyed, and just gives us a bit of motivation for the future, and on to bigger things.
Well, good stuff, because of course a name is one thing and a brand is one thing, but of course it's what you do with it. And I know, Anna, you've been busy through lockdown as well. You've done things a little bit differently. Previously you've had sort of stage type shows, but you've done digital shows instead. They've gone down really well. Give us a sense of what that lockdown has been like.
Well, so it was like everybody else, as soon as lockdown hit, you know, we do a lot of obviously interactive work. So pretty much everything was cancelled, you know, like I said, like everybody else. And everything was shifted online. You know, we tried to do everything we could, online challenges, whatever. We had like projects that we planned to do live. One of them was Real Talk, and we spoke with you on the radio back in 2019 about it. And we've already done like the event, but we wanted to make it bigger and use more men's stories and expand it. So we ended up taking that online, but in a way it was like a more of a positive thing, because we could reach more people who probably wouldn't attend a mental health event. You know, they can access from online, you're anonymous really, aren't you, just by watching something on a screen. And we found that quite often as well with actually the work that we've done online via Zoom and things like that, such as anxiety management workshops. You know, having anxiety is hard enough to actually come and attend a session, but especially if you're from Zoom, if you're coming on from Zoom, you know, you can have your camera off, you can have your microphone off and just sit and listen in the safety of your own home. So that has been like a positive thing really about being able to access things at your most comfortable state as well, definitely.
And I think that's probably an example about how this, the Zoom world, if you like, which a lot of people I think are ready to sort of leave behind, but actually there'd be plenty of organizations that have found a value in it. And actually, even if you are going to hold sessions, maybe worth having, you know, a laptop in the corner, which is, you know, streaming the session across, because then people are more likely to make those sorts of connections.
Definitely. I think that's what we've spoken about. Like, it's been that, like, you know, that gateway for people who have been too afraid to attend a session. And know that, like, especially something that's called like anxiety management, it sounds so scary itself really in a way, doesn't it? But being able to just access it from wherever you're at, it makes it more accessible really. So hopefully that will help people who are you know, struggling with their anxiety, and then they can take the next steps and hopefully one day attend a face-to-face session. It's just like taking those baby steps really in the right direction.
Absolutely. Megan, just explain to us, in fact, just tell us about Real Talk. Just explain for people who don't know what it was, how it worked and that performance level, and then I'll ask you about the sort of those ongoing sort of events and sort of workshops that you do. But just tell us about sort of the glitzy side of it, the bit where people go up on a stage and there's almost there's a performance, if you like.
So basically what we do, apart from deliver drama workshops, mental health and wellbeing, we reuse stories from the community and take that and make verbatim theatre, which is word for word theatre. So you record, our approach is we record people's interviews and they tell us about their experience with their consent, and they can choose to stay anonymous and they can choose to come forward and share their story about their mental health. In this case, it was male mental health, so anyone who's been through their own mental health journey with themes of addiction, there's themes of, you know, lots of different mental health issues. And then we put that together, edit it together into about, I think it was 17 minute audio, play that over speakers in the theatre, put a set together, and then have actors kind of deliver that on stage and deliver these stories. They don't tell the story because the voices do enough to be for an audience to be able to understand what it is that these men have been through. But we just try and give something more visually to an audience to make it more engaging. And it is, at points it's heavy, but it kind of has peaks and troughs. And hopefully by the end they come to this kind of, they've all come in unison and have a lot in common, actually, mm-hmm. considering these men didn't know each other. And we tend to interview people and they come out with similar things about, you know, self-destruction or self-esteem, low self-esteem was a big theme. And yeah, it just gives people an opportunity to be able to view it in a different way and people's stories in a different way. And you can do that with so many different mental health concerns. We've just done one about anxiety as well, quite fitting for the pandemic, but it is. And then you've got the lights and a lot of work goes into that, but we couldn't perform live at a theatre, so we filmed it this time.
What is it, do you think, in terms of those stories, and obviously I work in a medium where people share their stories and it's sort of a voice that people hear. What is it, do you think, in terms of that dramatic performance element that sticks with people, that makes it relevant, that there's also someone on stage, that there's a light show that comes around it? What does it add? What sort of feedback do people give you in regard to that?
I think personally it gives every aspect of whoever is involved some kind of outlet without it being intimidating. We talked about people being behind the screen and it's easy for their comfort of their own home, but in this case it's the crew behind it, which is us, and then the actors which are on stage, and then the men who come forward, and then the audience. You've got four elements, and I think everyone who is involved notices that. So an audience doesn't have to necessarily be involved or have a conversation, they can kind of just take it in, and there's still that support there after. We always make sure we have like post-show discussions with our audiences. It is quite an intimate kind of like show, but at the same time it's still you sitting with that kind of comfort if you want to come forward or not. And you might just know someone that, with the feedback we've had, is, you know, someone said, I could kind of think of my husband might be going through something like that, or, you know, or I can think of, or I myself have been going through that. And then the exact same for the men who were interviewed, they could choose to come forward or not. And then the exact same for the actors. I think they relate to it as well. It isn't just here's a character, you've got to play that character. It's a really like strenuous rehearsal process where mm-hmm. they have to delve into these people's lives and their story just to understand, and they do touch upon a lot of their own mental health concerns, or positive or negative, anything like that, to be honest. But yeah, I think that's what it, I think it's kind of that. And also it's just, it's a night out if you get to go to the theatre as well, and definitely, it's nice to watch something. So that's kind of the feedback that we've had from that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've spoken to a couple of the men who've shared their stories with you, and then their stories have been shared on stage and acted out, if you like. And they didn't use these words specifically, but from the conversation I had, I kind of got the sense that they, even though it was their individual story and it was their experience of depression or anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, they were almost amazed that their words had such a value that somebody A, wanted to record them, B, wanted to turn it into some sort of performance in general, C, to then have it up on a stage with the lights, and then D, at the end, for everyone to applaud. It really sort of gives value to those men who've shared their experience. And I kind of got a real sense that they felt much more like they were part of something, because they'd shared that story and people had seen value in what words they were using. And I think that's really powerful. That's really powerful to give that to those men, because actually they think, oh, actually, yeah, when I said those things, it wasn't just that someone nodded their head and went, oh, yeah, fine. Someone actually thought there's enough value in it to literally put it up on stage and have an audience listening to my words, which is huge, isn't it, Anna?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like, it's funny because we have these interviews with these people and like, we sit there with them for like 2 hours and we chat, and obviously we only get like little glimmers of it in like the actual performance, and we'd include everything if we could. But it's funny because when we listen and we have these conversations, like, because, you know, me and Meg have done a few of these verbatim shows now, when it's like somebody's talking to us, it's like we can start to imagine it on the theatre and like how they describe things and how like helpful that would be for somebody to hear and describe to them. And even if you can't relate with that yourself, somebody in the audience will. And that's, I think, the beauty of it, and how, you know, it does make you, it makes them feel so proud to be a part of something and, you know, have the confidence. And a lot of the people, like some of the people, didn't want to be known at all. They wanted to be kept anonymous. But then by the end of the project, they wanted to show their face on our documentary, which is amazing. So in that way as well, it helps the people who are coming forward, those who are so proud of it and want to share the world, but also those who kind of are hiding away from it as well. So it's helpful to everybody, hopefully.
And I wonder whether or not, and I don't know if this is true or not, but like psychologically, I think if you've got thoughts or feelings that you've always associated with negativity and the negativity in your own life, I guess if someone does find value in it and portrays it in a way which you then are able to take some positivity from, I wonder if that's part of it, that then those men who've often had negative thoughts about themselves and their experience, for them to then say, oh, actually, now I've seen it framed almost from a completely different point of view, and I'm looking at it with somebody else giving me that lived experience, I can find a different angle or a different sort of sense to it, which again is it's a pretty unique thing, Megan, you've got there. Mm-hmm. and a power to sort of show men that side of the story, that side of their story.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, it's good, you know, if you wanted to share your story with a family member or anyone that you've maybe not told, and you struggle to be able to iterate to people what it is that you struggle with and explain it, it's kind of a little thing that you can say, just watch this, or just come along to this, let's go watch this theatre show. And even if that happens between a son and a mother in an audience, and be like, oh, I've experienced some of that, it also is a conversation starter. If it's videoed, and you can say, this is something that I've been through and I can relate to, without having to go into detail about what it is that you're actually struggling about. So that was an interesting side of what we do that I found quite therapeutic, really, for people to be able to share their stories by relating to somebody else.
It's quite an investment, though, that those men make when they share those stories, because it's not, they don't necessarily, and I'm sure you're very warm in the way you do the interview and understanding, but it's a big investment for them, isn't there? Because there's obviously then a period of time when you're obviously putting the program, the show together, whereby they're almost thinking, I guess, do I even like the sound of my own voice? Actually, you've got to be sort of, I guess, really open to that as well, that these guys are investing in you and almost sort of putting their faith in you to do something positive with their story and their words.
Definitely. And I think that is like a lot, it is pressure, you know, on myself and Megan, because we would never want to, you know, portray something incorrectly. And we always say to them, like, I know it's an interview when we do it, but be yourself, be natural, don't be afraid to laugh or, you know, get emotional, whatever, because that's how we get the most authentic, you know, themselves out of this whole experience, this whole project. But I think it's so important that we keep in contact with them throughout like the project, and we invite them to you know, rehearsals, or ask, like, you know, send them clips of audio and say, oh, you know, are you okay with this? You know, this is quite a sensitive thing. And you know, a lot of the time they're engaged, and we've had really good feedback from everybody involved in our verbatim shows. And that's what's most important to us, the people involved. We want them to feel like, you know, their story's been told correctly, yeah, and that they feel supported the whole way through, and not just throughout, but afterwards as well. And we've kept that relationship with all of them, which has been great.
And how important is it that you, when you've got like a show where you've got people in an audience or people watching through, you know, digital means, that actually they sort of engage as well? Because of course it's one thing supporting somebody by almost telling their story from a dramatic point of view, but I guess as well you want that to be totally relatable to an audience, not necessarily that they'd be part of the next show, but then that they go, oh, I'd never thought of it that way, or I'd always struggled to express my emotions that way, but seeing it expressed in that direction made me understand it a little bit more. And the audience have got to be supported in that, haven't they?
Yeah, of course. And the first time we did it, we had kind of Nikki and Holly from like in the audience being their mental health first aiders. And it's hard online, because when we put, you put something out online, it's the other thing about someone being behind a screen, they're behind the screen, and sometimes comfort, it can be quite daunting for me and Anna, because that is, a lot of the stuff can be quite triggering. So we need to make sure we've done our research and got the kind of
warnings in place,
the trigger warnings and everything, like we would do in the actual theatre. But yeah, it's quite, like I said before, it's quite hard hitting sometimes, but then by the end when you hear them all come together, we try and do it in a way that it pans out so that they have kind of this recovery chat almost with each other, but they're not talking to each other, they're talking to me and Anna in a room.
It's a different response, because obviously, like, you know, you attended our mental health event when we did it a year ago or something. It's like, obviously at the end of the show, you know, you're talking with people and you're chatting and people are saying wow and all this stuff and people are opening up. But it's like at the end of like an online show, it's kind of like a weird feeling. Like, it's like, just, do people like it? Like, what is the response? But then we did get lots of messages from people saying like, oh, this, you know, this is what I needed, or, you know, this reminded me of, you know, my family member and things like that. And we did have a lot of messages in that sense. So, I mean, it's great in that sense. But I think obviously when you are face to face, you can make sure that everybody is fully okay, and, you know, you can chat with them and have more of a debrief. But hopefully we still were able to give that support online.
Absolutely. Just tell us about Megan, the sort of the ongoing work that you've got. Obviously the shows are the thing that sort of the headline grabbers, if you like, but what are those regular sessions like?
Yeah, so at the moment we're really busy with the rebrand, but we are supporting people through workshops, drama workshops with Care Merseyside and Empower. And we're continuing our work with Care Merseyside for a long time. Social prescribing is a GP prescribed, basically, drama workshop, if anyone wants to get involved in that. And you go along to your GP and then you'd get offered a list of like sessions that you could go to help with your mental health and well-being. And one of them would be dramatic recovery. Now need to get used to saying
that. Yeah.
And then you'd come along and me and Anna just lead those courses. So that's kind of what our day-to-day sessions are like. And they're just as, you know, I could walk out of a session just feeling so proud of everyone who's involved, because they say like, you've helped me. And it's like, with mental health, the person has to be able to want to help themselves. So it's actually nice to know that they've gone as far as, you know, coming to our sessions and actually being engaged and taking on the kind of outlet of drama. And we're exploring monologues with a group in Empower at the moment, and they write their own stuff and they write like their own scripts, and they're just so talented, and it's all based off life experience, and is a really big outlet for them. So that's our work going forward day to day.
And that's great that when they look at that list of, well, what of these things might be the thing that's good for me, that when they look down that list, then it may involve, you know, a sewing group or a pottery group or a music group or a football group or a sports group or something like that. Then they see drama. It's quite a good, I imagine when a lot of them see it, they think, oh, right, actually, this is something which I maybe was into when I was a kid. I always fancied being into it. And obviously for them to choose that shows that there are opportunities there for you guys in the future as well, that people will look for something like drama as an output or a way that people might think, well, okay, if I am going to explore my mental health, I need to do it in a way which I feel safe. And actually the fact that they look at that and think that drama is a good place for that shows that you guys are onto a good thing as well.
Yeah, hopefully, like, I mean, a lot of people, you know, initially say, I don't want to do drama, it's not for me, and that's fine, but it's always those people that the Oscar Award winning actor by the end of it. But it's just like a safe space, and I feel like as well, when we say, like, you know, we do theatre for mental health, we don't always explore like mental health issues, because it's like we do sometimes, but it's also that, like, it's that outlet, it's that way that we just come and we have like a laugh and we play games, and you know, you just feel like 10 times better when you leave a session, like me and Meg included, because it's great to be around people, and you know, sometimes we do just sit and have a chat about what's going on in our lives, and it's also that, you know, that sort of therapy. So it's lovely, and it's brilliant how especially drama, like, it brings people together. You know, you're always working with someone, you're working in the team, and each group that we work with, they're all like a little family, and everything's like such a safe space to create. And I think drama does give that freedom to do that, and you know, nobody's laughing at you, no one's judging you, it's just a creative space where you can just be yourself, really, isn't it?
But that's the joy of, isn't it, of the social prescription, because like on its own, do you want to come and sit in this room with some people that you don't know and talk about what's going on in your life? You might go, but actually, yeah, you can brand that with drama, you can brand that with football. You know, I know blokes who take part in football, and they don't even care about the football. What they like is the bit before or afterwards where they have the conversation, because that really is the bit that they feel that they really need. And then the other thing is the reason to come through the door. And it's the thing which is the enhancer, if you like, yeah, of the experience. That it's like a bonus that they also got to have a bit of a laugh in a workshop. And it was a bonus that they also got to kick a football around with their mates. And I think that's a sign that social prescription as a model can really work, but you've got to have all those options available to people, and those opportunities have got to be there. And you might not even like the first one. You might go in for the football and actually realize you prefer the snooker one, or you might, you know, you might prefer the sewing or the pottery, or you might do 10 of them, and it might be the 11th one is the one that actually makes you think, actually, this is the place I feel more safe, this is the place I'd rather share. And obviously you guys have got drama boxed off now, so that's big pressure on you to maintain it.
Yeah.
There's a stigma around it. People are still very unsure if you see it on a piece of paper.
Yeah. But as well, it's like, you know, it's like going to football, you work towards the match. And, you know, with drama as well, we work towards like little performances where you can showcase to your friends and family. And it gives you that, you know, focus on something that, you know, a lot of us need to, you know, focus on something and work towards something and be proud of something. And it gives you that, you know, stability as well and purpose. So it's definitely, we love it.
Good stuff. Now, in terms of sort of where we're at now, in terms of this lockdown ending or not ending, we've got this sort of ongoing period of time. It seems like a good time. You guys have obviously got the rebrand and the new name, and you'll be getting that out as well. Do you have something in mind for like a year's time? Is there something in particular you're thinking, well, depending on what happens over the course of the next 6 months, maybe this is what we want to be able to achieve? This is the next show, for instance. This is the next opportunity that we really want to seize.
Well, in lockdown, we mentioned it before, we made a piece about anxiety called Don't Panic, and the plan was to make it into a visual, but we really want to give it live. Like, it's such a uplifting, energetic show, is it? And we love to have a live audience. It's quite different to what we've done before as well, and it'd be great to have an audience. And you know, it's been like such a big project. Whilst we've done it, we've been doing these anxiety workshops and working with people and being link work, and lots of different things has been going on with it. So it's got so much research and like work, and it's been able to help a lot of creatives have a job in lockdown. You know, we were able to hire videographers, set designers and things like that, as it was funded by the National Lottery. So we love to be able to, like, you know, show it to people and invite people and get people talking about it, because I feel like it's a thing with anxiety is like a lot of everybody experiences anxiety at one point in their life, probably multiple, but I think it's really enlightening to hear different aspects and opinions and how anxiety can affect your life. And I feel like it can be a word that's thrown around a little bit, and for us it's been really educational, hasn't it, to find out all these different types of anxiety and how people cope, and hopefully just be able to educate other people about it as well. And it'd be great to showcase that.
Definitely.
Now, can I ask you about your sort of your own personal experiences through lockdown? Because it's been, what was the line before? We're not all in the same boat, but we're all in the same storm. I like that one.
Yeah.
Megan, I'm going to start with you, if that's okay. Now, you guys are, I'm going to say you're very young, but whereas in the past that would be you're carefree and you can enjoy yourself and, you know, you're not tied down by mortgages and all those sorts of things, although you do have this important job that you do now. Traditionally, that's seen as like the time where everyone's having a great time and everything's been particularly wonderful. But all the stats are going to show that actually young people have had a really negative time in lockdown, and actually some of the restrictions that a lot of people have been able to cope with, because a lot of people, maybe even if they're older, they may have, you know, nicer houses, garden spaces and so on and so forth. Whereas young people who maybe don't have that have had to put a lot of their lives and their plans on hold. And there's been like a big full stop for a lot of them, as opposed to it being, you know, a comma, which you can move on after a few months. You know, we're on, what, 18 months nearly on from coronavirus emerging as well. And that's a big chunk of your adult lives, isn't it?
Yeah. It kind of freaks me out when I look back at the years. I'm like, oh my word, because I met Anna in uni, we graduated. And then I was like a little travel bunny. I wanted to travel. I went to America for a month. And then when I went and worked in the NHS for a year, and it was gives me the flexibility to be able to come back, drive from Manchester to Liverpool to be able to do this job. And then just as everything was like taking off and everything was starting, I moved into our bird and Nana's family for 6 months. And they said you can move in here, because at the time I had no money to move in on my own into a flat in Liverpool. And then they gave me a little room, and I was dead happy there. And then COVID hit, and then we couldn't deliver face to face, and I had to go home. And it was hard. It was like we said before, a lot of the time me and Anna do this job because we struggle with our mental health in the past. And I think a massive message that I'd say to anyone is, doesn't matter, you know, what you look like on the surface, but everyone goes through something. And it was our outlet, our job as well. And it's good for us to get out there and meet these people. And yeah, and when that's all cut off from you, I think with like a lot of creatives, it's been the same. And I went home, and then it was just kind of like, what do we do next? And when is this going to end? And then fortunately I was able to move back to Liverpool as soon as everything kind of lifted again. But then that kind of uncertainty again of when you think it's all going to get back to normal, and then something else gets knocked back, you're thinking, oh, I've just put my kind of like life online to move here and do it on my own, and then something hits again. And it was just living in this constant like circle, I'd say, up until even still now. I think there's still uncertainty out there about COVID and the lockdown. And when you're on your own, it just brings up a lot of kind of past demons, doesn't it? And I think that's what everyone's kind of struggled with. And then especially trying to integrate back into a normal daily life. I literally socialized all weekend and I'm just like tired because I'm not used to it. But yeah, when someone's like, how have you been? And you're like, I don't know.
I think it's like as well, because like we say this a lot, especially when we do young people workshops, like we probably come across as like two young, confident girls, but a lot of the time me and Meg are like, oh, what about this? We're, you know, we're dead worried and all this stuff. And it's so like, we want to be authentic. We want to be approachable. And if it helps someone know that we struggle, you know, hopefully they can open up to us, you know, because it is challenging and it's a lot of pressure. Like I found lockdown pressurizing because I thought, you know, my job's in mental health. I need to do what I can to help people with their mental health. And I think I threw myself into it too much that I just burnt myself out completely. And, you know, I think that lockdown was the first time I actually reached out for help properly. And I probably should have done it a long time ago. So perhaps for me in that way, it was helpful that, you know, I was very still and I had to, you know, I was thinking about things more. So it made me reach out for support. So I think in that sense, you know, lockdown was good that it made us face our demons a little bit, like you said, Meg. But also it can be pressurized, especially for, you know, health workers and, you know, people who are trying to help people. It's a lot feeling like you've got to, like, not like fix people in a way, isn't it? Like, that's what I feel like. I had to do everything I could, but I wasn't looking after myself. And I think it was both of us kind of felt that way. So
yeah, there's pressure on young people as well as a whole to kind of, with the social media, like social media and lockdown was crazy. When I'm looking back at it, I'm thinking,
that's
wow,
why we started our little podcast, didn't we, about
and social media and everyone, you know, trying to do the most with this time. But everyone's at different stages of their lives. So how could you possibly do the same as someone else who's in a completely different financial situation? And I think behind that comparison, you had to really just drum down to yourself what it was that this is a highlight reel, and we're seeing highlight reels all the time. Mm-hmm. And then no one ever really, well, you do see people post about the struggles, but it's not the common theme on social media. And even if you did see someone post about the struggles, I think if you're going through something, especially for people like me, moving home was difficult. And I think, like, it's you go back to your old life in a lot of ways, and sometimes a lot of people don't know really what's under the surface. So as long as you're taking time to look after yourself, like Anna said, and stopping and then reaching out if you do need it, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah,
it's interesting, Anna, that you said that you thought, I better reach out for help. Mm-hmm. I guess positive that you'd had so many interactions with so many different organizations that actually you were able to recognize it in yourself that you did, and also presumably then knew maybe which organizations to speak to. And actually, in the wider world of mental health, that's actually, although it's not great that you had to be there, that's actually the dream, that people are able to A, recognize that they need a bit of help, and B, know where to turn. So actually you're an example of, although you've had a difficult time of it, you're an example of someone who there sort of knew what to do, and therefore, you know, you'd obviously done the groundwork, you'd educated yourself in that.
Definitely. I think it's like, I mean, it's easier said than done than reaching out for help. Definitely. I think, like I say, I should have probably done it a long time ago, but it did help that I had a job in mental health and I have experience, and I know so many other people who work in mental health because of what we do, and we have great relationships with partners and all things like that that work in this industry. But you know, it is still difficult, and it's still really, really hard to get, you know, support urgently, or, you know, therapy, and it's a long process. And I think things like, you know, things like social prescribing and things like, you know, what we do, like non-clinical interventions, it's like, if you are going to be on a waiting list, it's helpful to know that, you know, organizations like ours, like so many others, are around to like support you whilst you're perhaps seeking, you know, talking therapies and things like that, because it is so, so bad that you have to wait like 12 months to just speak to somebody. And I wish it could change, and I always say to Meg, I wish we could do something about it, but I know we're doing what we can to help people in the process of all of that, but it is really bad. Hopefully we can change that one day.
Fingers crossed. No, and it's about, I think, signposting the fact that those issues are out there, and actually people's experience when they do reach out, because I think sometimes people who are on a list are often just seen as like the people on a list, and those waiting times are just seen as numbers on a piece of paper, where actually those are people's lives. Those are people who are getting out of bed or not getting out of bed, you know, every morning for a year, for 18 months, waiting for the email to come through that says, this is the service for that's open to you, and you've got it for 6 weeks. And at the end of that, you know, you're back on a waiting list. But in the meantime, why not drop down to Dramatic Recovery, speak to Anna and Megan, and maybe like try something a little bit different?
Yeah, and like that's why, like, you know, our new logo is like, it's like a mask, it's like a drama mask, but it's like the happy one in front of the sad. And because we wanted to say, like, we explained this on social media last week, but we wanted to explain that we all have that, like, we all have that mask, that theatre mask in front of us that we, you know, we all put on an act, and I bet the majority of us did in lockdown, and like it'll slip eventually when you can't keep it up. And, you know, we kind of just want to help people to, you know, there's no shame in taking that mask off and being emotional and being able to express your feelings, because we all have bad mental health days, bad mental health weeks, and that, you know, it's completely normal. Unfortunately, I do still think there's a terrible stigma around it, even though it's, you know, talked about so much. I know friends and family members that wouldn't even approach the subject still, and you know, it's still unfortunately a stigma, but we just need to encourage people to just take that mask off, and you know, you'll feel so much better afterwards and get the support hopefully that you need.
There was something on social media, and I'll get this quote horribly wrong now, but it was in regard to Naomi Osaka, the tennis player, who said, you know, I'm just not going to take part in the French Open, I'm just not in the right place for it. And I think everyone largely was supportive, but then it was the usual people who are paid to have controversial opinions for money who would then say things like, oh, she's making it up. And I saw someone say on social media, people don't lie about their mental health, they lie about being okay. And I thought that was a really strong, I thought, oh yeah, that's a great line. I'll use that and use it badly in the future in a podcast.
Literally, that's great. That's true.
I thought, oh, that's so true, because everyone has the conversation. How are you? I'm okay. How are you? I'm fine. And you think, right, what's going on here then? Like, but we use that all, that's literally and what it is, I'm not fine, but I don't have time to explain it to you now, or I'm not fine, but you're not the right person to explain it to, or I'm not fine, but just let me get on with it because I'm trying to deal with it in my own way. And that's a really relatable thing, isn't it, that people go through? Like, oh, I'm not saying it's every day that people feel like that, but you always respond like to go, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, everything's okay. Because if you said to people, no, it's not, they wouldn't know how to respond. You wouldn't trust them to know how to respond. They might not be the appropriate person to respond to. But we've got to be mindful of that when we do say, and people go, oh, they said they were okay, but they didn't seem they were okay. Yeah. Is there any action that I can take?
It's like another way as well, like that we say this when we talk about traumatic recovery, that we act every day. You know, we do drama for and help every day. People act like they're okay. And then if you, like you just said, if you tell somebody that you're not okay, people don't know how to respond still. And, you know, they're like, oh, what do we do? And, or if you say something shocking that might be quite normal to you or somebody else, people really don't know how to react, do they? And it's that education that we need. And to just, like, it's if people doesn't say, you know, it's like when you just presume somebody's going to say, how are you? You know, you're passing someone in the street that, you know, you don't really wait for the answer for them to respond. And you're like, you're right, you just carry on walking. And it's, you know, people do that. It's just, you know, how society is, isn't it?
But we've cheapened, haven't we? We've cheapened the question of, are you okay? You're right. And we've done it in a way which is, I don't think it comes from a malicious place at all, because you want to know that person's okay. But really what you're saying is, acknowledge me in a way which is positive. I think that's what really you're saying when you're saying to someone, you're all right. Whereas actually what you could do is go the other way, which is basically to say, hello, and hello back should be enough. And then if they go, oh, you don't look so well, or look like, you know, you should have something to talk to, or you need someone to talk to about something, let's go and grab a coffee, or I'll pop around later, let's have a conversation, and so on and so forth. But absolutely, that's very much ingrained into society. So I'm sure that won't change anytime soon, but let's try and make the difference. Megan and Anna, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us for Mental Health Monday. All the best with Dramatic Recovery across social media. Is there a website that people can go to?
Yeah. dramaticrecovery.co.uk.
Perfect place to start. Thank you both for your time. Megan, Anna, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Mick.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout
to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.